Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
On WEEI AM 850 and the Radio.com app.
Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over. The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
I mean, I don't know. World Series talk, whatever. That was one of the best performances. Probably in the history of the World Series.
Alex was professional.
We would ask that everyone reserve judgment.
Understanding that he had made a mistake. He admitted that what he did was wrong.
For the Red Sox, going forward, they were in a difficult position. Here's Alex Cora, named in this report 11 times.
You know, it worked last year.
In some people's mind, attach an asterisk to that Red Sox championship.
Well, I just want to reiterate what we said, which is that we ask our fans to reserve judgment until the investigation is completed.
But as we stand here today, do you still believe you beat the Dodgers fair and square?
Absolutely. Absolutely, yes.
Oh, what a fall it was. 15 months ago, Red Sox were on top of the world. Hit rock bottom this week. The firing of Alex Cora, investigation to come on an elaborate, complex, insidious, and nefarious taping system for sign stealing. Here to weigh in on that and so much more is our old buddy Steve Buckley. You know him as Buck from the Boston Herald, now of The Athletic and WEEI, various other media outlets. Buck, good morning. How you doing?
Excuse me, I'm not doing as well as I was a week ago, and I was walking my dogs in shorts and T-shirt. But other than that, I'm doing fine.
A little nippy out there this morning, isn't it?
I just got back from the coffee shop, and I had like the four sweaters and the gloves and the scarf and the whole thing going on. But I could have sat there all morning, but I rushed back just to do this interview.
Well, I appreciate it. Hey, Buck, I feel, you know, you're like the old-time baseball guy. You always have that game in Cambridge every year. You're kind of doing old-time radio, going back to your AM days here, a little amplitude modulated. But it's been a while since you've been on the AM dial.
No, it's funny because you and me, and I guess Dale, go back to 590 AM.
That's right. We were on the 5,000-watt powerhouse way down the dial, which is now a religious station, I believe.
Yes.
Yep. And you
go ahead.
No, you came aboard. I believe you came aboard in 93 as a host, but you were one of my early guests way back in 1990, as a matter of fact.
Yes. Yeah, so I remember when I wrote for the National, appearing on your show on the old WEI before it was all sports, I believe.
Yes, we were. We had a talk show when the Bruins and Celtics were not playing in the winter, and we had to go up against the Red Sox, who were on the old RKO, which is a different company in those days. So it was some tough sledding that first year.
All right, listen, never mind all that.
A little
Buck,
reminiscing.
Buck, can you assure
we created sports radio in this town.
Yeah. Listen, can you assure us that your game over in Cambridge does not entail any sign stealing?
It's funny you should say that because I wrote a column on for The Athletic the other day on how the Red Sox, for the second time in 20 years, are going through a weird change in managers. And I speak of 02 when they fired Joe Kerrigan halfway through spring training, which we knew they would do when they got ownership of the team. So I called Mike Port the other day, who was the general manager back then after they fired Dan Duquette. And I was talking to him about illegal sign stealing. And his response to me was, well, let me ask you this, Steve Buckley. At the old-time baseball game, do you have a replay booth? And I said, no. And he says, do you have this? No. Do you have this? No. Do you have buzzers? No. And then of course, playing up to me, he said, then that's the way baseball should be. So,
trash cans?
we do have trash cans, but they're not put into use for that purpose. So I'm very pleased that Mike Port used the old-time baseball game as the basis by which one would look at good, clean, old-fashioned baseball.
Well, speaking of old-fashioned baseball, I'm looking at one of your pieces in The Athletic, and there are several excellent ones. If you do not have The Athletic out there, by all means, the subscription's fairly fairly modest, isn't it, Buck? Fairly affordable?
Oh, well, there's all kinds of deals that they offer every couple of 3 weeks, but you can get The Athletic for basically $4 or $5 a month.
That's
great. And you know, you get me and Jen McCaffrey and Chad Jennings, Fluto Shinzawa, Joe McDonald on hockey, and plus you can set up your homepage. You can look at the Detroit stuff, the Chicago stuff, long before The Athletic was around, I was telling people nothing is more interesting than, like, say the Red Sox play the Detroit Tigers. Read what the Boston media writes about that game, and then read about what the Tiger media writes about that game, because it's so different. If a guy on the Red Sox hits a home run the ninth inning to win the game, he's lauded by the Boston media as a hero. Well, in Detroit, that same game, the Detroit writers are saying, boy, that bum gave up that pitch, and that's how the Tigers lost the game. It's always written through the lens of the readers that you're writing for.
Well, I'm looking at one piece here, and I love the headline. This is the worst Red Sox offseason since 1919. Is it really that bad? The worst offseason in 100 years?
Well, first of all, I covered all of them, so I know of what I speak. And number two, you've got, like, they traded Fred Lynn, you know, Fisk ends up with the White Sox, and some of the winter of 67-68, Jim Lomborg tears up his knee, and that sort of changed things. But we are looking at an offseason here, without even getting into Mookie Betts and the salary cap threshold and all that nonsense. If you just look at the managing situation in a vacuum, Alex Cora, I believe, is about to become only the fourth manager in the entire history of baseball to be suspended for an entire year. Now, he's already lost his job, but you got to go back to Leo DeRocher with the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1947 and then Pete Rose in 1989. Obviously, A.J. Hinch is number three. And Alex Cora is about to become the fourth manager to be suspended for an entire season. That makes it on the cusp of within a year of winning a World Series and being viewed by everybody as this great figure and going back home to Puerto Rico. He's very fan-friendly. He's great with the media. The players love him. So looking at it that way, it's a pretty bad offseason.
I would say. Doc, baseball... you were at the press conference the other day. And I saw you there, and I'd like to get your impressions of it.
Well, as I wrote in The Athletic, it was today they're having winter weekend, and on Wednesday they had winter waste of a time. You had, on the one hand, John Henry, Tom Werner, and Sam Kennedy. And by the way, I like all those guys. I like what they've done with the team, and it's hard to argue with the results, not just the World Series championships, but the fact that over a number of years they've done a spectacular job sprucing up Fenway Park. And they're reaching to the community and so forth. So I applaud them for their, to use John Henry's word, stewardship of the team. But when it comes to this, it's hard to believe that it was a mutual parting of the ways. I think it was mutual in that Alex Cora put his hands up and said, all right, I'll go. But they clearly decided they couldn't move on with Alex Cora as their manager. And then I think maybe a little bit they also threw him under the bus with this thing. Well, Alex admitted he made mistakes, but we still won the World Series legitimately. So they're sort of blaming Alex Cora for what happened with the Astros, but claiming innocence to anything that might have happened with the 2018 Red Sox. And by the way, that may turn out to be the case, but they didn't answer anybody's questions. And my question, I asked it twice, was, in view of the fact that the Apple Watch thing happened in September of 2017 and that Major League Baseball tisked the Red Sox and said, do not let this happen again. Now, just weeks later, you're interviewing Alex Cora to be your next manager. Did you bring this up with him?
Mm.
And it, like, was it put there, hey, listen, by the way, we just got into some trouble here. So just remember, if you're our next manager, make sure that doesn't happen, because the commissioner is going to be watching. And instead we go, well, we'd really rather not get into, you know, the interview process. Well, no, I think that's important information that fans had a right to know.
Did baseball overreact with all these punishments and suspensions and fines and draft picks and everything else? And will they continue to do that with the Red Sox, do you think, at this point?
Well, okay, so I am hearing from some people that I know that the Red Sox case may not be as drastic as the Houston case. So if you try to look at them as two separate things, you may not see a loss of draft picks and a $5 million fine and all that. I may be wrong, but again, for the time being, I'm choosing to look at them as two different things. I agree somewhat with what Chris Gasper wrote this morning in that it's a little goofy to basically declare an amnesty for all the players who might have been involved in this, particularly when you named one player, that being Carlos Beltran, who subsequently gets named manager of the Mets and then, of course, steps down a few days ago. So in the spirit of what Major League Baseball said, Carlos Beltran should be allowed to manage the Mets because whatever crimes he committed, he was doing them as a player at the time. But it does look goofy, even though in the letter of the law that they've handed down, Beltran's eligible to manage the Mets. But it would seem weird him managing the Mets in 2020 when he was clearly involved in all this.
How do you practically, I agree with a lot of what Gasper wrote, and he said that the commissioner should come down hard on the players as well, but how do you practically come down hard on many, many players on individual teams? You're wiping out half the rosters by doing that.
Yeah, so the reason what I was trying to say was I agree in spirit with what Chris is saying,
right,
but the you try to take a step back and look at it through the lens of being a businessman. And I want baseball. I love baseball. I want baseball to prosper and survive, and not for their capitalist gains, but the fact that I like baseball. Now, moving forward, if you begin suspending players left and right, left and right, left and right, is that for the good of the game? I don't think so. So I think the spirit of what they did was, look, we can't have double-A players playing baseball in 2020 because we found out everybody was doing this. But if we come down hard on the people at the top, general managers and managers and so forth, I think that sends out a powerful message that we are vigilant about this and maybe it stops it. If you want a historical perspective, we all know about the Chicago White Sox and Shoeless Joe and all that in 1919, but it was really just a few years later that there was a game-fixing scandal involving Tris Speaker and Cy Cobb for third-place money at the end of the season. It was something kind of silly. And Speaker, I think, was managing Cleveland, and Cobb was managing the Tigers, and they were fixing games. And what Major League Baseball came in, and they very quietly, hush-hush, just took care of it, but without all the lifetime suspensions and all that, because I think what Landis did was take the – look, we're digging out from the last big mess here. We don't want baseball to go away. So I think thinking of the greater good of the game, it was just sort of they just quietly disappeared. Tris Speaker never managed again. They ended up playing for Philadelphia or something, and life went on.
And, of course, the most famous one, at least it came out decades later, the shot heard around the world, October 3rd, 1951. Bobby Thompson probably knew what was coming from the hand of Ralph Branca on that afternoon in the Polo Grounds.
I read that book, The Echoing Green, by Joshua Prager, and it involved Herman Franks, who years later would manage the Cubs, who was a coach with the Giants. He had the telescope out in center field, and they had a buzzer system that would go to, back in those days, the bullpens were in foul territory, and they would buzz something to the pitchers, and the pitchers would send a sign to the batters, and the batters presumably could guess what was coming. Bobby Thompson claimed, I believe, late in life, that he wasn't part of it. Some players said, no, it screws up my timing. I don't want to know what's coming. And I think Thompson claimed that. But if you look at where the Dodgers were, or the Giants were at that time, and the incredible streak they went on, particularly at home, and how they ended up, the third game, October 1st, 1951, and they end up winning the pennant. That's a big black eye for baseball, if you want to do a deep dive into it, because I've always believed that the Bobby Thompson home run, with a big help from the Russ Hodges home run call, is the greatest moment in baseball history.
Which was worse, the cheating scandal or the steroid scandal?
Yeah, people have asked me that. I guess I still say the steroid scandal because I can't point to specific evidence, but we all know that there were younger athletes, high school and college and so forth, who were experimenting with steroids, and there was congressional testimony from parents whose kids died using steroids improperly and without medical supervision and so forth, and without the money to have people get them in the proper fashion and use them in the proper fashion and so forth. When I say proper fashion, I mean the least harmful way is what I'm saying. So when you consider that steroids are not good for you in terms of your long-term health and that they can kill you if they're administered improperly, I would have to say that the steroids were worse.
Although people have been making the case to me who have kids who play baseball at a pretty high level that when – and I agree with what you just said, but the school of thought that believes that maybe the taping and the sign stealing is worse is that as far as an advantage is concerned at the major league level, would you not agree that if you know what's coming, that's a bigger advantage than juicing up?
Oh, totally. Yeah, and I think was it Trevor Bauer just said that the other day?
Yeah.
He said, I would rather face a guy with steroids than face a guy who knows what's coming. You're 100% correct, but that's looking at it strictly from a baseball perspective. I'm taking a step back and looking, I hate to use the word societally because it sounds kind of lofty, but nonetheless, if you look at society in a whole, steroids were really nasty and dirty and hurt a lot of people.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right,
and by the way, I've come around on the whole steroid thing because I can't play judge and jury with who's on steroids and who's not when it comes to Hall of Fame voting. So I've made my peace with it. I vote for Bonds and I vote for Clemens. I don't vote for Manny because the rules have been posted on the bulletin board by then. You know, don't swim an hour after eating a meal, and he went swimming before he had that hour. So I don't vote for Manny, and my way is just as flawed as anybody else's, but I do vote for Bonds and Clemens.
All right, who's your next Red Sox manager?
I don't know. I was asked that at the coffee shop 20 minutes ago, and I think that Veritek is a possibility. He would be a fan favorite, and when you consider that a lot of the strategy is taken out of it now because of the metrics and analytics and all that, his inexperience as a big league manager, I don't think is as big a deal now as it used to be. And he seems to hold the respect of players and management and fans and so forth. I think he's a worthwhile candidate. And he's interviewed for manager jobs before. He had the Seattle job a few years back. And another good thing about Veritek, no disrespect to David Ortiz and Pedro Martinez, but Veritek is not a celebrity consultant. When you go to spring training, Pedro picks a young pitcher every year and works him in the outfield and so forth. And David Ortiz, well, Yaz works with minor league players and all that's great. But Veritek is like the high school math teacher walking around with the slide rules and the notebooks and stuff. And he's in and out of the clubhouse. He's up in the room. He's working on scouting and stuff like that. He's a real baseball operative now. He has shed the mantra of celebrity to become a baseball working man, and I respect that.
And as you said, the in-vogue manager, at least up until recently, was, the young guy, up-and-coming, not a lot of experience, collaborator with the general manager in the front office, instead of the no-nonsense Buck Showalter type who's, basically going to do it on his own. He doesn't want to hear from analytics and general managers and executives and everything else. So that would be fascinating. I think that would be a very good sell for Red Sox Nation as well.
Yeah, and by the way, I like Buck a lot.
Yeah.
When I was covering the Yankees years ago, he was the Yankees eye in the sky coach, and he used to literally sit with us in the press box, drawing up outfield alignments and stuff. So I go back a long way with Buck and have a lot of respect for him. He would not obviously be a good choice in Boston because there's clearly a bad history there from things he said over the years and so forth. So I don't think that would go well. One name to kind of put in your back pocket is Sam Fuld, F-U-L-D. He's from New Hampshire. He's a really bright kid. I don't know who he's with now, but he played a little bit in the big leagues with Tampa Bay, and he would have been with Chaim Bloom at that point. But he is considered one of the – I think he's a Phillips Exeter kid. Was it Stanford? I keep meaning to look him up. But he's a name I would put in your back pocket as a potential candidate in this mix.
Watching the press conference the other day, obviously we all have our opinions about that, but specifically, I thought Chaim Bloom presented himself very well. Your impressions?
Not that I'm here to sell subscriptions to The Athletic, but I did write an entire column a few days ago on Chaim Bloom in that, in fact, I started to say this and I went off on a tangent, but as bad as Sam Kennedy, Tom Warner, and John Henry looked at that press conference, Chaim Bloom was sitting way off to the right. He could be above the fray because he wasn't here for all that.
Yep.
With anything, he only got on the job a couple months ago. So later on, they had him off to the side, and of course, we devoured him and asked him a lot of questions. But he was very forthright, particularly about like Jason Veritek. I've gotten to know him. I respect him and his baseball acumen and so forth. Dave Dombrowski would have been, well, I don't really want to get into that. I don't really want to get into like that. But Chaim has impressed me so far with the manner in which he carries himself. I've talked to people on the Rays and know him really well. He's very young. I don't think he is as media savvy as, say, Theo was. Mm. I mean, Theo really knew how to play that game. I don't think that Chaim Bloom is of that stripe yet. I think he was just being as honest and candid as he could be under the circumstances, and I think Red Sox fans will appreciate that from him.
You know, I bet though, if you ask the average Red Sox fan in the street or in your coffee shop in Cambridge, Buck, they wouldn't even know who Chaim Bloom is. I think he's really been under the radar so far.
No, I agree with that. It's not the, because I've always said that the two toughest jobs in Boston are manager and general manager of the Red Sox. And it's different with the Patriots, because when the Patriots bring in a player, you often don't know who that player is. But when the GM brings in a player, everyone, Terry Francona put it best. Everybody, male and female, has played some level of baseball, and it could be just kickball in the courtyard in the fourth grade. But the premise is the same. You kick the ball, you run to first, you go to second. So everybody has an idea of how baseball works. So everybody wants to play manager and general manager. That's what makes the job so hard. But because Bloom was so anonymous prior to his coming to Boston, and because we're in a market now where football is so dominant in the fall and winter, there hasn't been a lot of talk. I'm guessing you guys have not talked a lot of baseball.
Nothing.
Until this.
Nope.
Because it's all, you know, and I respect that. I mean, I'm a baseball guy, but I'm also a realist, and I don't dislike football. I recognize that football is a very dominant theme this time of year, and we're not going to talk hot stove the way we used to, because 25, 30 years ago, you know, the Patriots were an NFL team, but not one that we wrapped our hands around and embraced on a daily basis.
So where do they go from here, Buck? Can they recover? Can the Red Sox recover and baseball overall recover? What's the next event, do you feel?
Well, I would keep an eye on the ongoing stuff with the Astros. All this stuff is being tweeted out about these buzzers that players may have been wearing, and baseball is putting in. So, no, we found nothing there. And again, that may be baseball saying we need to, you know, turn the volume down here a little bit. But no, I don't think there's any doubt that baseball has taken a hit. Sam Kennedy at the Winter Wonderland, whatever it's called, out in Springfield, said yesterday that, yeah, ticket prices are down. And one could say they're down because they're coming off a season in which they did not win the World Series, as opposed to the previous offseason when they did win the World Series. So you could do the simple math there. But I would take a look at what the Red Sox draw this year, particularly if they don't play well. But it's not a good look for them right now. And it is interesting that a lot of the email and posts at the end of my column that I get that were not supportive of Alex Cora, but you go back to Spygate with Belichick, I'm not comparing the two infractions, but what I am comparing is the fans' reaction to them. Belichick continues to be an iconic figure here with lots of Teflon around him, save for the whole Malcolm Butler thing. People got on him on that, but then they conveniently won a Super Bowl a year later. So the Malcolm Butler thing has kind of gone away.
That's a really good point. And I think Cora might have gotten a little more slack from the fandom around here had it been right after 18 and they had won their 108 games in the regular season. It was an historic season. People were comparing to some of the all-time great teams. But a year later, after 84 wins, lots of issues, a lot of disillusionment, I think the fans have taken a different attitude toward the whole thing.
Yeah, they have. And, you know, listen, I was very impressed with Alex Cora during his time in Boston. He accessible, accountable. How many times did a game, man, and Alex Cora would sit there before the media. There were several times where he brought up something, a curious in-game decision. Oh, by the way, I just want to talk about this. There was a game where they had the lead, and then in the ninth inning, they should have taken J.D. Martinez out and subbed him out defensively, and he simply forgot. And there was a ball hit the left that J.D. Martinez had trouble with, something like that. I forget the specifics.
I remember, yep.
He would bring those things up. And whereas a lot of managers get very defensive and, what would you do? And they throw it back at the reporter and so forth. But the open book approach, or as open as he was willing to make it upon reflection, the open book approach he took, I thought, was kind of refreshing. And I think that, and again, particularly in baseball, everybody wants to play manager at home. So the more, and I love Jimmy Williams. I thought Jimmy Williams was the greatest guy and a good manager. But when he would be asked a question after the game, hey, why'd you do this? And he would say, manager's decision. And, well of course it was. Duh. we didn't think the guy up in Section 9 made the decision. But he would answer the question, oh, manager's decision.
If his frog had wings was his greatest answer of all, though.
Well, you know, it's funny you should say that because I was just thinking the other day that every time in all four teams, when a new coach or manager is named, he looks shiny and happy and smart, brilliant. And every single time I walk out saying, wow, this guy's going to be around for 15 years. They finally got the guy who's going to be there forever. The only time I didn't feel that way was with Jimmy, because that press conference when he was named manager was such a mess. And he was not only the frog head booty thing, but he kept pacing back and forth. And I'm talking like a 20, 30 feet stretch where you would go in the camera. The poor guys were in the booth trying to turn their cameras and all bumping into each other, trying to keep them in the shot. And I wrote, and when I was with the Herald, my column the next day, this is going to be a disaster. and I went up to him in spring training. The first day of spring training, I went, hey, by the way, my name's Steve Buckley, and I'm one of the many people who wrote that your press conference was a disaster. And he said, oh, I appreciate that. And we ended up getting along great. And he managed the team for 5 years.
Well, what did you write about Bobby Valentine?
I forget the specifics of whatever, but I did not write that it was going to be a disaster. I knew Bobby really well because I used to work for the Hartford Current, and every time we went into Texas, I would always have to do it. I was obliged by management to write the obligatory Bobby Valentine sidebar. So I knew him. I'd walk in there, and he goes, oh, here comes Connecticut again. And I would ask the same stupid questions about, you know, playing baseball at Scalzi Park in Stanford when he was a kid. And that was my job. So I've known him. What I didn't know when he was named manager of the Red Sox, and what would become readily apparent, is that his, for the lack of any other way to put it, his administrative skills had waned by the time he was made. He'd been out of the game for X number of years, and he was working in TV, and working in TV isn't always the same as, you know, being in the trenches. And I think that he suffered for that when he became manager of the Red Sox.
Hey, last point for me. The biggest problem I see with the Red Sox, aside from what has gone on already, is, you know, they still have to deal with Mookie Betts and David Price. And they're trying to, in other words, if you're trying to win the public confidence back, not a good time to be cutting payroll.
No, it's not. And I think John Henry made some unfortunate comments that day when he made the statement about getting under the salary tax, the luxury tax threshold. What he did was he created a theme that has run through the off season. And I'm willing to bet when you guys did talk baseball, when you weren't talking about Edelman and Brady and all that, but when you did talk baseball, you were inevitably talking about the possibility they would trade Mookie Betts and David Price and Jackie Bradley Jr. Well, that thread was delivered to you by John Henry that day when he made those comments. And even though they haven't done anything yet, we are waiting for the other foot to drop. And I'm in the camp that believes that trading Mookie would be a disaster, because I would love him on many levels to be that next guy who's here for 15 or so years and becomes the next Mr. Red Sox. And, you know, they haven't had a player spend his entire career with the Red Sox and then go to the Hall of Fame, I don't think, since Yaz. You know, Boggs moved on. Dwight Evans was not in the Hall of Fame, but he moved on. David Ortiz began his career with the Seattle and Twins organizations So it'd be kind of fun to see Mookie be a wire-to-wire Red Sox and become the next great Red Sox icon ambassador, but it doesn't appear that will be the case.
Hey, well, the other problem is that with this controversy going on and whatever, it'll be interesting to see how effective all of these guys are next year with hitting.
Yeah, and by the way, I should add, Jim Rice was a wire-to-wire Red Sox. As I was speaking, I realized I should throw him into the mix because he's a Hall of Famer and a great ball player. But yeah, no, and people, Larry, throughout baseball are going to be looking at numbers this season. They're going to be looking at home-road splits. Mm-hmm. They're going to be looking at Altuve. They're going to be looking at all these players to see what they do this year. And if there's a lot of pressure on these Astros like Bregman and Altuve and so forth, because if statistically they get off to a slow start, a lot of very smart people are going to be, he doesn't have a little buzzer this year. Oh, they don't have the trash cans anymore. And whether that was the reason they had great numbers before or not, people are going to leap to that conclusion, which is that's what the optics will be, and that's a problem for baseball this season.
Hey, Buck, before you go, I'm very fascinated by what's going to happen on Tuesday. The Hall of Fame will announce its 2020 class. Obviously, Derek Jeter will be atop of that class. Will Schilling finally make it?
No, he won't. I know he's right at the seventh. You know, there's a guy, Ryan Thibodeau, in the Bay Area that does the Hall of Fame tracker. And if you go to @notMrTibbs on Twitter, he does an outstanding job of polling all the writers. Like, I give him my selections. A lot of us do. The problem is only about 40% actually reveal their choices before the announcement's made. And then the numbers always drop because it's the more conservative voters don't reveal their results. So he's right around 74, 73 now, okay, Somewhere in that neck of the woods. His numbers will drop and he won't get in. Jeter obviously is going again. I think Larry Walker has a very good chance. Bonds and Clemens are right around 75%. But again, once the reveal is made with the vote on Tuesday, Bonds and Clemens will not be in. Schilling will not be in. By the way, I vote for Curt Schilling. I voted for 10. I'm a big haul guy. But no, I think we're definitely looking at Jeter and probably Larry Walker.
Larry and I had this big argument last year after Rivera got the 100%. Should Jeter go in as his teammate did, 100% of the vote?
Oh, you should, yeah, because he's a not because he of all players is worthy of the honor, but because that whole 100% thing should have been dealt with years ago. Willie Mays should have been 100%. Tom Seaver should have been 100%.
Hank Aaron.
Roberto Clemente should have. Henry Aaron. We can go on. Ernie Banks. You know, these are iconic players. All of them should have been 100%. So when I say that Derek Jeter is worthy of 100%, not because he's up on a pedestal with Mariano Rivera, but simply because he's a lock. Every year, well, not every year, but every once in a while, there is, in point of fact, a Hall of Fame lock. How can you not vote for this guy? And Pedro Martinez was a Hall of Fame lock. I mean, I remember at the press conference asking the question, hey, Pedro, 423 people, whatever it was, voted for you. 28 did not. How did you feel about the 28 who didn't vote for you? And very diplomatically, he said, oh, I don't care. I'm in the Hall of Fame. But it bothered me that as a BBWAA voter, and we have a great organization, I'm going to sound lofty here, I think we're the best equipped to vote for the Hall of Fame. Because we're at the ballpark every single day, year in and year out. But that doesn't mean we don't make mistakes. And when certain players don't get 100%, it bothers me.
Well, the argument, of course, last year was, how can you be against Jeter getting 100% of Rivera? That would mean that someone would have to take them off their ballot, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But I guess there's some curmudgeons and some old-timers who want to stay with the conventional way of not giving the people the unanimous vote.
Yeah, and I think what happened is that's become much more of an issue than it used to be. And my guessing is that last year Rivera was going to be so close to 100%, that if the votes came out and it turned out that one person didn't vote for him, that one person would have been, I mean, every little amateur detective in the country would have been calling up every single voter, and eventually it would have been unearthed that John Hinglebottom in Texas didn't vote for him, and then that person would have been hounded to the grave. So I think that the holdovers, who the curmudgeons, as you put it, who didn't believe that anyone should go in 100%, that no one on the first ballot. I mean, there's this whole thing, well, Babe Ruth, Frank Bob, they weren't unanimous, and so nobody should, which is, of course, silly. And I think that the holdovers voted for Rivera just because they didn't want to deal with that fallout, which would have been terrible for them.
But congratulations on your writings with The Athletic. We appreciate you taking a little time out this morning. We spared you from taking your dogs out for another walk. And
I'll be taking them out in 20 minutes.
That's, oh, boy.
Rain or shine. That's the deal. That's the arrangement.
In the future, we'll call on you again to get your opinions on what's going on at Old Yawkey Way.
Thank you, and keep reading The Athletic. I love working for them.
I do.
All right, Steve.
I do. Thanks, Steve.
All right, Steve Buckley, Boston Herald, formerly now with The Athletic. You can hear him on EEI every once in a while, and, of course, gave us a good chunk of his time on 8:50 a.m. Mustard and Johnson show. We're going to take some of your calls, continue to talk about the baseball sign-stealing scandal, which has rocked not only baseball in general, but Houston and, of course, right here around Fenway Park and even down in Queens with what happened with that Carlos Beltran. So your thoughts and comments on that, and we'll get into a little AFC and NFC championship talk and Tom Brady discussion in the 11 o'clock hour. Of course, we're all waiting for March 18th. That is the free agent deadline. The Patriots, of course, looking to make a deal with Brady before March 18th to avoid some salary cap issues and, of course, keep Brady right here for another couple of years. We'll discuss that and a whole lot more at 617-779-0850. It's Mustard and Johnson, Sports Radio 850 AM, WEEI.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Tom Keegan, Boston Herald. Sam, in parting ways with Alex, did you ask him to sign a non-disclosure agreement so at some point he doesn't get into the details of who was involved and all that?
And no. And we're not going to talk about any other details related to his our parting of ways.
Okay, and then how about for the next manager? Will there be any contract language that voids the contract if he's caught cheating for, and then detail the reasons?
Yeah, standard language in baseball contracts. Wouldn't anticipate a departure from that.
That was the news conference that Larry Johnson, quite frankly, was, I don't know if you were disgusted by it, but you certainly weren't exactly embracing Red Sox execs like Sam Kennedy, Tom Werner, and certainly John Henry as they tried to kind of toe the line.
I thought they were going to open the doors in, you can have a discussion about things regarding this matter without throwing anybody under the bus or waiting for the commissioner's report. I just sat there listening to it, and I kept saying to myself, why bother having this? Because you're not answering any questions. So why bother having it?
Well, we've seen some strange press conferences over at Fenway Park. I remember at the end of the 2011 season, which the Red Sox had that disastrous collapse. They won, what, 7 games in the month of September, blew a 8-9-game lead for the wild card, and lost on the very last play of the 2011 regular season on that very strange Wednesday night. Remember, they had Theo up there. He was gone by the end of the week. It wasn't too long where Francona was gone, and they were all up there with their smiley faces and everything else, trying to put on a good face of a terrible situation with the whole beer and chicken fiasco of September of 2011. That was pretty bizarre. I don't know if this was bizarre as much as I think they probably felt they needed to do something. They needed to get out in front of it because, you know, Larry, if the troika, which is, I guess you'd say, was is Werner, Henry, and now Sam Kennedy, if they did not hold the news conference, I know you well, you would say that they were hiding behind, you know, the desks, or they're refusing to talk to the media, that they're stonewalling.
Well, if they're going to fire Cora, then right. They'd have to have
exactly.
Some kind of
right.
A
right.
Presentation.
Right.
I still think by far this is like the best ownership this town has ever had with regard to the Red Sox. I don't dislike any of them. I think it was a very, very difficult situation that they were thrown into the middle of, and that's unfortunate. But that's what goes with the territory, and when these things do come up, I like to be candid. I like them to just tell the truth as best they can, and I didn't... I'm not saying anybody was up there prevaricating or anything, but I just felt that there was very little information that came forth.
Not only were they not prevaricating, they weren't even lying. So that was pretty amazing.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
But could they ride a horse?
But so Buck had some interesting thoughts on the future of Red Sox management as far as the manager is concerned.
I don't know
Veritek.
Why. I'm not anti-Veritek, but I just... This old school network crap, you know, round up all the old school network
people.
Well,
how is he an old school network person?
Well, he was a former player here. He paid his dues.
Yeah, but you would. I think the old school network would more readily apply to a Showalter or a Dusty Baker.
No, but you get somebody different.
Well, Veritek's somebody new. He's never managed a game in his life.
That's the problem.
Okay, so what do you want? First of all, you'd say
I want somebody who's paid his due.
Well,
I want a Butch Hobson. Oh,
okay. Well, naturally, he's one of the great managers. As a matter of fact, I correctly predicted way back in 91 that he was the manager for the Boston Red Sox, and the Red Sox complied, and those were the glory years, the Butch Hobson years, 92 yeah, through 94.
That was
94.
One of your fighter radio moments.
That was I was at the top of the heap as far as radio prognosticators were concerned when I made that prediction. But wait a minute, so you said you don't like the old network crap, but isn't Dusty Baker and Buck Showalter part of the old network crap?
I think they need to clean house and get some new people in there.
Wasn't Veritek new?
To me, he's not.
Okay, but what does he represent?
First of all, he hasn't managed a game. You already said that.
But this is the new trend in baseball. There are a lot of first-time managers.
Yeah.
Okay? There are a lot of people who, because it's a collaboration, if you're willing to
Pedro,
work.
I don't want Pedro. I don't want Veritek. I don't want any of those people. I think they're great, great people.
But here's my thing. If you were in support of Veritek, say.
I'm not.
He's a catcher. And catchers know more about the game
than
knows that as well. Maybe protecting signs. Maybe
now they're too busy paying attention to the pitcher who's in a tunnel looking at the home plate.
Right. But catchers
tend to
be.
And who's going to play the drum?
But
that's
catchers,
what I want to know.
Do you want to talk about this seriously or not?
I do. Okay. Who's going to play the drum?
Okay. So So you would prefer a Dusty Baker or a Buck Showalter over Verita?
I don't want Dusty Baker because I don't want us taking any more blame than we'd already
taken.
Okay,
so you'd feel pressure that every time the Red Sox lost and the fans would be coming after him with pitchforks and everything else.
And a few other things. Yeah,
okay, so that would not be your first choice. How about Showalter? You like him?
Yeah.
Why do you like Showalter?
Disciplinarian.
The problem is I can't.
Suffered through the Orioles season.
Right. I cannot see, never won a championship. He's always been good at building a championship. That 95 team the Yankees had lost to Seattle the next year, of course, in the offseason, he's fired. They bring in Torrey. They win four of the next five. So.
You like Socha?
Socha, you know, at one point, Socha was considered one of the great managers in baseball, but the Angels went down. He's been out of baseball for a couple of years easily.
Which I never understood why he was a great manager. He won one World Series.
Won one World Series, but, you know, he was, because he came from the National League, another catcher, he played aggressive baseball. He brought sort of a National League style, I think, to the American League, and he was hot for a while, but the bloom has been off his rose for a long time. I think Veritek makes a lot of sense.
I like Cora. Yeah.
Well, you know, no one says we. Yeah, but he's not coming back, Larry.
I know. Okay, that's the sad part.
Right. So, are you sad that Cora's gone?
Yes.
Okay. See, I'm not sad about it.
I thought he was a good manager. I thought he was very refreshing, as far as being on the big show with the guys and stuff. I thought whatever they threw at him, I thought he was very honest.
No,
and I really liked that.
He's very skillful with the media. He's a very, it seemingly he was an honest guy, but behind the scenes,
well,
obviously.
Well, if they had asked him about the stealing the signals, right, maybe he would have.
I blame the Big O, because Big O, as the, you know, the playing, you know, playing the focal point of that show, he's in the big chair, he's the point guard, he should have asked that question. So I really hang this whole thing
on
Glenn
Ordway.
Isn't it true? Yeah. I mean, seriously, he should have given him some withering cross-examination. Come on, Alex. We know what your role was in Houston. You brought the whole system over to Boston. Come on. Fess up right now. Confess. So it all comes down to Big O.
I do miss Cora. I know you can't, so what are you going to do? But I'm very sad about that.
Are you sad or you're angry?
Both.
Okay, you're sad and angry.
I'm angry because he allowed himself to be put in a position to make these decisions.
I wonder how long it's going to take for Alex Cora to repair, if he ever does, his career. Will he ever get another chance? I think probably a couple years down the line when the dust settles.
Bench
and we know
coach or something, and he'll have to work his way back up.
I don't know if he's going to have to work his way up. I think that there's generally a dearth of great managerial talent out there. He's a proven winner. As you say, he's got all of the skills. He's a great communicator. He's a terrific psychologist. He knew how to handle, especially obviously in that 2018 season, he was brilliant with that. He is a guy that you want to listen to when you hear him on the radio or you hear him interviewed. You'd want to sit down and have a beer with him. It's the kind of guy, extremely likable. Obviously, an excellent manager, worked well with the higher ups in the organization, but this thing is going to be around for a while. Eventually, people will move on.
I wonder how many other shoes will drop.
Well, according to Manfred, no other shoes are going to drop. He's going to stop it with the Red Sox organization, and appears as if it's going to be Alex Cora, AJ Hinch, and Carlos Beltran. All involved with the Houston Astros in 2017. Cora brought everything over to the Red Sox. Those three guys, I guess, are going to be the poster boys for the sign-stealing scandal. And it doesn't look as if he's going to go any further than that, and that will be interesting to see how that plays out. All right, 617-779-0850 is the telephone number. Do you have scandal fatigue? Are you sick and tired of this story after 4 or 5 days of nothing but sign stealing? Signs, signs, everywhere a sign.
Want to move on to another subject? Let's talk some football. We're going to get into that as far as the Brady situation is concerned with free agency looming in about a month and a half on March 18th. A little bit more. I guess actually today's January 18th, isn't it? So that's 2 months away. Mm. We have, Larry, just think, we have two more months to talk about Tom Brady's impending free agency.
I can't wait. Well, who is he selling his house to? What's going on? Well, where's the dog? Well, I want to know.
Well, according to Greg Hill, on the award-winning, critically acclaimed and ratings-rich morning show, Tom has already, moved into his new house in Greenwich. The old house has been cleared out in Brookline, and Tom is ready to set himself up as a quarterback somewhere else. We will get into that and maybe talk a little conference championships as well with you. 617-779-0850. Mustard and Johnson, final hour coming up on Sports Radio 850 AM WEEI.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.